You are listening to NTC Messina's podcast, where our desire as the family of God is to simply know God, love one another, and make disciples. What a gorgeous day out today. So glad you're joining us this morning. Just because we did not have our announcements, I want to just bring your attention. We have connect cards in the seat backs in front of you. And if you are new here, we would love to connect with you. You can fill that connect card out, fill it out, turn it in at the connect area at the end of service. We have a gift for you. We'd love to get to know you, love to meet you. Sometimes it's hard in this context with a lot of people. We don't always see everyone that comes in the door, so we'd love to have you fill that out. You can do it during the service and turn it in after. It would be wonderful. So if you weren't here on Friday night, you missed out on an incredible event. Who was here with our annual partner party? We had an awesome night. We had incredible food. We want to just thank Matt and Bridget and their team for cooking for us. And we had the sanctuary torn apart and all the tables in here, and we celebrated together. We had incredible desserts by Kathy Barney. Oh, my gosh. Those were amazing. Thank you so much. It was just an incredible time. We celebrated the year behind and just all the things that we do as a church together, as a family, as partners in the work that Christ has for us. And then we talked about the future. We talked about some things that we're believing for. One of those things is actually in the parking lot right now. I don't know if my pictures are still there. Could you throw this up? So we're not going to do a small vision fund raising this year. And we kind of just sprung for it because I got a great deal. Do you have the pictures? I don't know if you do. I probably should have told you. We bought a Mercedes Sprinter. It's about almost 10 years old, not quite. So it's not brand new. Obviously, we could never afford a new Mercedes Sprinter. But we got a great deal on it. Our Chevy Express van that we bought in 2005 has done its job and has been falling apart for years. And finally, the shop told us we will not pass it next year, and next year is the end of this month. So we waited as long as we could, but we went and picked this up yesterday, and we drove it. But we are going to be doing a one-time offering to help pay for this, and that will be on December 8th, a Sunday. So we would just love for you to pray. Consider how you can help give to cover the cost of this. It was $26,500. They are about $80,000 new. Isn't that crazy? I know some of you are driving around $80,000 trucks, but in my mind, that's more than I owe in my house, so I can't drive around a vehicle that costs more than my house. But anyway, we have a new 15-passenger van. It's really incredible. Pray about giving towards it. We would love to cover that cost so that we really just are able to do it easily. So, we had an incredible night together. We'll be talking about those things. We're not going to talk about them today, a few things that I talked about, but we are going to be talking about those things in the coming weeks. If you did not make it, you can talk to your friends too and hear some of the news ahead of time, but we'll be sharing different things over the coming months and, of course, into next year. So today, we're continuing our series on growing up, right? We've been doing this. Actually, if you're here at the partner party, we all gave you little seeds in a nice little clay pot and told you to trust us that we put a seed in there, and you have to water it every day and believe that it's going to grow, and I think it's all herbs. That's what the ladies picked out, and so we're just kind of practicing this idea of believing that God's calling us to grow, right? We're not meant to stay stagnant in our Christian walk with Jesus. We're called to grow to maturity, and so we've been doing this series, all these different ideas. What does it look like for us to grow up? What does it look like for us to actually mature into the people God's called us to mature into? And so today's topic is honestly a big one, but I would think that sometimes people don't think this is very spiritual. They might think it's a little spiritual, but not very spiritual. And so you've got your notes in front of you. The title is Rest, Sleep, and Rhythms of Sabbath. And so, you know, a number of years ago, probably at least five or six now for me, I came to a very heavy conclusion that I'm just not a very good human being if I don't sleep well. Anybody else with me? You're all like, we're here, aren't we? early on a Sunday morning. And so there's this reality where I realize, man, I don't do well in the morning with my kids getting ready for school. I'm not very pleasant to work with if I'm overtired. The other one is being hungry. But if I'm overtired, it doesn't work well. And I really had this kind of, not epiphany moment, but revelation that God really requires of us and creates in us this thing where we are supposed to rest, to sleep, to have Sabbath in our lives. We're going to talk about Sabbath. And I realized that there's a part of me that just loves to work. And it's not just work, right? Because work itself isn't everything. But what I loved about work is producing something. And, you know, I grew up in construction with my dad and my brothers. And there's something about building something for me where I get done the project and I can kind of stand back and be like, wow, that looks good. Like, I did that. I built that. And it does something in me that actually fulfills me. And so there's this place where, in a sense, I really loved producing. And so you end up getting into this place in your life. And I think that, you know, in our, you know, society, we'd call them workaholics, where we work and really we almost get addicted to the idea of always producing, always making more, always doing more, always working more. And I think especially in America, Western society in general tends to put very high value on work. We put really high value on how much we work. In fact, usually what you get when you ask people how they're doing is either a very nonchalant good or they say really busy. Oh, I'm busy. How's life going? Oh, it's just busy. It's really busy. I'm filled, like no extra time. And honestly, our society has drowned us in busyness, has literally burdened us to an extent that we probably aren't very healthy humans on a regular basis because we don't know what it really is like to actually rest. There's some statistics out there right now. It says 83% of Americans say that they are stressed by their work. 77% of those same Americans would say they lose sleep almost every night because of their work. And so right there, you have this epidemic where people can't actually rest. They can't shut their minds off. They can't sleep very well at night. And it creates something in a society, but also in us as individuals, where we aren't operating in the design that God called us to operate in, that we aren't actually being what God's called us to be. We're supposed to be restful beings. And it almost seems like, wow, like this isn't that spiritual of an idea. I'm coaching people on going home and going to bed early. But honestly, this is extremely spiritual. Because I would say this, that for me, what I realized is, if I was going to do what God's called me to do, then I would have to be ready to do it. And the way I wouldn't be ready to do it is if I'm overburdened, overwhelmed, and overtired. And if that's my whole life, how could I absolutely find any space when Jesus asks me to do something to say yes to it? I think we all suffer from this. We all suffer from, in a sense, misplaced priorities on where we spend our time. And I talked about time already. But one of those misplaced priorities is actually giving space to sleep. Now listen, I understand that life isn't as simple as just going home and going to sleep. I have 5 children. Those 5 children, I swear, are sent to just wake me up when I want to sleep. At any time of the day, night, morning. Everybody, I hate daylight saving times. Like, literally, we should do a popular vote on daylight savings times. I think we could kill it. And everyone's like, oh, you're going to get an extra hour of sleep. Maybe if you're older and don't have anybody else in your life. But even then, I'm like, do you guys have the whole internal time clock? You just wake up before your alarm goes off anyway? So what is this extra hour of sleep thing? It's nonsense. My kids just get up 2 hours early. I don't understand it. It's like they know, like Emma's up at 4 a.m. cooking breakfast and bringing it to us in bed. And I'm like, I want to be the nice, sweet dad that's like, oh, thanks so much. And I'm more like, get out of my room. I want to sleep. But sleep is something extremely powerful in us. It sets us up. You know, we just look at the natural life that God created for us. And you can't possibly go, this is what the statistic is, you really can't go more than 3 days without sleep. I think the longest known person to stay awake, this is like, of course, people claim longer than this, but it's 108 hours is staying awake. And actually, it was a runner. A runner who basically was trying to win the longest continual run ever. And what happened for him, literally, is at that time period, he just fell over on the road and fell asleep, literally. Your body tells you you have to sleep. Now, unfortunately, what we do is we try to restrict that sleep. So there's a group of people that they call short sleepers. And I think my wife is one of them. But they say that about 4% of society, 4% of humans can get by on 6 or 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours of sleep. Now, 4 to 6 hours is like, that's like I just got started. I'm an 8 for sure, plus, if I can get it. And so 4% of people might be okay with 4 to 6 hours of sleep. But then what it actually says, there are other statistics in the States that say 65% of people sleep less than 6 hours. So a lot of the people that are sleeping less than 6 hours aren't supposed to be sleeping less than 6 hours. And it becomes this kind of compiling thing. There's other stuff out there if you read about sleep that tells you that you can't catch up on sleep. You ever get that in your head? You're like, oh, I'll catch up this weekend. And they say you literally can't catch up on sleep. There's no such thing. Now, you can become rested. And so there's a side of us that thinks, oh, well, that's okay for me to deprive myself this many days and then just get rested over a couple more days. You feel like you caught up. But actually what they're saying is you've done detrimental things to your body in that time that are irreparable. And doctors will tell you this. Sleep is when you heal. Sleep is when your body recovers. Sleep is when your body actually gets into the most important things that your internal organs need to do. There's a lot of things that happen during sleep. And we can look at the science of that and all those things, but really we can look at the scriptures and find out that God created us to rest. He created us to sleep. It's why it's compelled in our bodies every night. It's why we're about to read scriptures where even we take a day where he says, stop working, just rest. And so there's something in us that maybe, you know, this is what I would say is kind of the baseline of sin. And sin usually says this, we know better than God. And sin tries to convince us that we don't need the guidelines that God has given us. And so sometimes we think sin is just like, oh, I swore, or I drank too much, or I did some kind of, you know, immoral act. And so that's sin. But really sin, and we've talked about this hundreds of times here, is anytime we act outside the design that God's given us. And when we begin to think that God's design isn't really as important, or we might say, hey, God, I don't really need sleep. I don't need as much. I don't need a Sabbath day. I can work 7 days a week and just keep on rolling. We start to say the very basis of sin, which is, God, we know more than you. And I don't care who you are, it always ends poorly. When we start to think we know more than God and we start to practice a lifestyle of where we make choices acting like we know more than God, it will end poorly for us. And one of the things that I think we think is innocent, but it really is detrimental to us as individuals, but it's also detrimental to all the people around us, to the work that God has for us, is when we kind of trivialize this idea of sleep and rest. You know, so this became pretty serious for me over the last 5 or 6 years, and I realized that I worked too much. I worked a lot. And I I realized that I needed to get my rest under control, and I started to try to regiment that. One of the simple things that I realized is I just needed to go to bed earlier, that the Netflix show I was watching wasn't really that important. And I decided I wasn't going to scroll for endless hours on my phone before I go to bed. You know that actually triggers you to wake up, the whole scrolling thing, if you read some science about it. What happens through the blue light technology that is in our phones and the scrolling function, which causes our eyes to roll on a constant basis like that, it actually triggers your brain to release endorphins. It's why you almost can't stop sometimes. You're like, faster, faster. And so a lot of us, what happens is we get into bed and we do that. And then we try to put our phone down when we're exhausted, and then we're like, why am I awake? Why am I thinking? Why am I thinking about all those things I just watched? Well, it's because you just triggered your brain literally to wake back up, and it's now confused. And so I would just say, recommendation, don't do those things. So for me, I had to get into this place where I started to regulate my sleep, and then I realized, you know, if you worked here 10-plus years ago at our church, we worked Monday through Friday, and we never counted Sundays as a work day. And somewhere in there I thought, that's not true. I work hard on a Sunday. We get up at 7. A lot of us are here really early. I go to Augsburg usually after this. I don't get home till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, that's a work day for me. I'm on all the time when I'm here at church. And so we were like, you know what? We're going to work 4 days during the week, and then Sunday counts as a work day. And we made this adjustment in our schedule as a staff because I was like, we have to believe that we should have rest in our lives. We should have Sabbath. Unfortunately, for me, Sundays are not my Sabbath day. I'm not, you know, resting on this day. In fact, my brain is working harder than any other day of the week when I'm here. And so we decided to implement this Sabbath. And then I even took it a step further. I started to look at the Old Testament. We're going to read some different scriptures about this. But I started looking at the Old Testament. You look in Levitical law when it talks about rest and Sabbath. And God puts out this kind of pattern for them as they're farmers and growers. And he talks about this place where, of course, once a week at least there should be Sabbath. Once a week there should be this day off. And then actually 3 times a year, they take a whole week off in the Old Testament. And it's after their harvest week. They would harvest, and then they would have a week of rest. And then actually, every 7 years, they would tell the land to have a rest. And so I think there's a place where, even cyclically in our lives, there should be moments where we aren't working as hard. It doesn't mean you can stop working every 7 years. That doesn't really exist. It didn't even exist in the Old Testament, but they gave the land a rest. And so it's a place where we should have restful rhythms in our life. And we began to implement this, and I realized that it changed something in me, and it really changed something in our staff. And this was what I believed, and this is the lie that I think we have to overcome. That if we believe in rest and Sabbath the way God describes it in the scriptures, that we can actually be more productive in the 6 days than we can in the 7 if we work them all. And honestly, that was hard for me to wrap my mind around, because I'm thinking, no, I can work some extra hours on Sunday. I can get more things done. But if we actually have a restful rhythm in our life like the scriptures describe, that we would actually be more productive humans, healthier humans, healthier for extending the kingdom of God, healthier for saying yes to Jesus when he calls us to do things, if we actually allowed ourselves to believe that a restful day would prepare us for the work that God has. I want to start, I've just given you a whole bunch of kind of precursor thoughts here, but I want to begin to read some scriptures. So Genesis 2 is the first place that we see this, right? You've got God in Genesis 1 creating the heavens and the earth, and all the things are taking place. You see the creation story lay out, and he gets to the 6th day, right? And on the 6th day, he creates men and women. It says male and female, he created them. And he comes down now to chapter 2, verse 3, and it says this. Well, we'll read right from the beginning. It says, so the creation of the heavens and earth, this is Genesis 2:1, and everything in them was completed. On the 7th day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy because it was the day when he rested from all his work of creation. Here's the simplest thought ever. If God, the creator of the universe, of everything we understand and see and experience and know, decides to take a rest, you probably should take a rest. Like, literally, God is like, I need a break. I worked hard those last 6 days. And what's interesting about this story, too, that kind of hit me as I had gone down this road of just thinking about rest and rhythms of rest of my life, is that God creates man on the sixth day, and man's first experience is a day of rest. That actually the first thing man gets to do is relax. Before he even gets to work, there's a day of rest that takes place. And recently we made a shift even with our days, and I talked about this briefly on a Sunday. We used to work Tuesday through Friday. We had Saturday off, and then we worked Sunday, and we had Monday off, and we kind of did this weird skip thing. And recently, we moved it where we work now, and this is what we would say as a staff. We work Sunday through Thursday. And so when we have Friday and Saturday off, what I believe we're doing is not just resting from our work, but we're actually resting into our work. And just like creation happens here, man and woman are created on this sixth day, and the first day they have is a rest day, and the second day they have is a get-to-work day. And for us, like especially as staff, when I've thought about it, Sunday is usually our big day. It's the day that we've spent a lot of time planning for and working for, and all of you are here. And it's our big day, and we're actually resting 2 days before the big day. And so we're resting into our work, and it actually has begun to shift something inside me that, you know, made me feel better about everything I do here on a Sunday. Because honestly, sometimes what was happening is I'd get to Sunday, and I'm just tired. All the work week that we had, all the meetings I had, all the planning I had, and I'd get to Sunday, and a lot of times my mentality, honestly, as much as I love being here and love being with you, and I would never miss it, was like a get-through-it mentality. And how many of us go to work and have that in our mentality? Just got to get through the day. Just got to get through that next meeting. Just got to get through talking to that guy. Just got to get through this week. Just got to get through this month. Or just got to get through this hard year. And unfortunately, what happens to us as humans, we start having this get through it mentality instead of an actual place where if we had maybe a rhythm of rest, we would be going, oh, I can't wait to tackle this. I feel rested. I'm ready for it. And we actually would rest into our work, and we would see the work completed, and we'd have fulfillment because that's what work is supposed to do for us. We see that in Genesis 2 as well. And maybe something would change within us where we wouldn't look at work and the things that even we put our hands to as something to get through, but actually something to be fulfilled by. And I think a lot of it does hinge around whether we have made decisions in our life to have healthy rhythms of sleep, rest, and Sabbath. I know that Sabbath is no longer holy for people. It's no longer that important of a thing. You know, years ago, when I coached baseball with my son, our team and our people knew, like, for me, Sunday was basically a no-go. We would go to tournaments, and I would come back here to church, and I would go back. I would just let my assistant coaches take over for that day because, honestly, for me, I was like, hey, first off, I got to be at church. I'm not going to miss that. But part of it was modeling, like, this is important to me. Actually, they were so good to me, and they liked me enough back then. They moved a ton of stuff off Sundays because I kind of complained about it. And I know that our culture doesn't care about that anymore, right? Like, how many of us have sports games and things on Sundays now? It's just the common thing. But I think there's something holy about Sabbath, and we're going to get there and read. It isn't about some sort of legalistic idea. God's trying to say, listen, if you take a day and give it to me and actually rest, you're going to be better for it. And it's like we just push that aside and like, well, that's a nice idea. But you don't live in 2024 in America, Jesus. Like, you don't understand the pressure to be like everybody else. You don't understand the pressure I have to do at my work. You don't understand how many hours I have to put in so that I can succeed. You don't understand what it takes so that we can pay the bills. And yet, I think we don't understand how we were designed. I don't think we understand the importance of what it means for us, like God, to actually have a restful mindset, to have this place where we would maybe rest into our work and see God begin to do something in us and around us that is different than what we've experienced before. That we'd have fulfillment from the work because of healthy rest. So we see this in Genesis 2 with God, and then we're going to jump down now to Exodus 16. And Exodus 20, we're going to read here in a moment, which is where the Ten Commandments are. And of course, many of us would know that in the Ten Commandments, it talks about keeping the Sabbath holy. But really, the Sabbath was something that historically, even in the scriptures, they can't quite pinpoint when it began other than in Genesis 2, that somehow people saw what God did and rested on the seventh day, and it just became this holy thing, right? You see, it says God said, set apart this day. And of course, we get to Levitical law after Exodus, and it gets written in law, gets written in the Ten Commandments. But it was a general practice and an understanding, like, we should be resting this day. So Exodus 16, 23, I want to read this scripture to you real quickly. It says, on the sixth day, so this is a whole storyline where the Israelites are living in the desert and the wilderness, and God is now blessing them with manna, right? He gives them this manna from heaven. We don't really fully understand what it is, but it would appear on the ground almost like dew, and they would collect it. And actually, God kind of made this rule in the process with manna where he said, listen, you can only collect enough for the day that you need. And if they tried to collect more than they needed, it would actually turn to maggots. So don't collect more than you need. And it was an interesting lesson, I think, that God was teaching them. Like, where are you going to put your trust in for your resource? And so he would just give them enough for the day. He was teaching them, let me be what you need. Trust me when I tell you what you need. And so they would collect manna, but it would get to the sixth day, and he said, on the sixth day, you're allowed to collect twice as much as you need, because I don't want you collecting on the seventh day. And so he says, 22, I'm going to start there. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much as usual. Four quarts for each person instead of two. Then all the leaders of the community came and asked Moses for an explanation. Why? Why are we doing this? And Moses told them, this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow will be a day of complete rest, a holy Sabbath day set apart for the Lord. And so he goes on to explain. So bake and boil as much as you want today and set aside what is left for tomorrow. He says, a holy Sabbath day for the Lord, a day of complete rest. Have any of you ever had a day that you can even think of in the most recent time where you did nothing? Right? Like, even on my days off, I like am making a list of all the things I've got to do. And if I sit around for like an hour, I literally feel guilty. Does anybody else feel that way? I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been sitting here for like an hour. I need to go do something. I got to look like I'm getting something done. Or I got, you know, I could go rake for 25 minutes, or I could go pick up the garage and clean that. Like, for some reason, something inside me doesn't want to actually rest. In fact, most of us look down on it when we see people doing nothing. But yet, here we are, and he's saying, no, a day of complete rest, even to the degree where they're saying, we don't need to. Now listen, he says, gather four quarts instead of two. How long does it take to gather two quarts of manna? Doesn't sound like a hard job to me, right? Like, two quarts. And yet, he's saying, I don't even want you doing that on the seventh day. Now, of course, we see in Hebrew tradition and the Jewish faith that they kind of take this to a crazy degree and they can't do literally anything. We have some funny stories. One time my wife and I were in Nysum in New York City and we were in this Jewish part of the city and a lady literally came out from her house, saw us on the street. Of course, we didn't look Jewish to them. So she comes over to Jessica and she says, come inside, come inside. And we were all like, what is happening right now? But she was like so forceful bringing Jessica inside. So we come inside and she just needed Jessica to turn her stove on. She had forgotten to set the timer to cook whatever they were going to cook. And she wasn't allowed to turn the knob to turn her own stove on. Now, that's probably a little crazy. I don't think that's fully what God's meaning here. But he is trying to teach them something, and he wants to teach us something. To believe that if we actually took a day of complete rest where we weren't striving, where we weren't working to produce, where we weren't trying to catch up, that if we did that on a regular basis, a weekly basis in our life, that God would actually cause us to produce more in the other 6 days than we did trying to do it in seven. That we would become healthier people in our lives. And so he's teaching them this Sabbath, Exodus 20. We don't have to turn there, but just a few chapters later, we see Moses in the Ten Commandments. In the one commandment, actually, let's turn there because there's a whole bunch in that. We get to the Ten Commandment on the Sabbath day, or on the fifth commandment, and it's about the Sabbath day. He says, remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Holy simply means set apart, that you don't treat it like the other 6 days. That you take one day and you say, not this day. He says, set it apart. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you. I love this. He gets really specific. Because you're like, well, yeah, nobody else can work, but I could. This includes you. Your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them, but on the seventh day he rested. This is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. He describes, you know, he even knows our loopholes. We're like, well, I'll hire people, and they'll work for me on the seventh day. He's like, no, not even your hired people. Not even the foreigner that doesn't believe like you. Not even your animals. And what he's saying is, stop producing just for one day. Shut your mind off a little bit for one day. Rest for one day. Give this day to me and just be who I've called you to be. You know, I've heard this many times, I'm sure you have, that we're human beings, not human doings. That there's a place where we're called to just be. And I know, like, as I say it, it goes against the grain of who we are, probably especially as Americans, especially as blue-collar, hardworking North Country people. It's like, what do you mean don't work? I got to split 10 cords of firewood. I got to go out and cut up the deer I just killed last night. I got to do X, Y, and Z. I have to, and we have this list, and the list never ends. You know what I realized? You never catch up. Never. You never, never, ever, ever, ever will catch up. There's always more. So just let there be more. But on one day, say, I don't have to do the more today. I don't have to do that more today. And I would imagine that something would begin to change inside you. That if we actually created this rhythm where we were able to rest and sleep and give God a day of our week, that something would really shift inside us. Let's turn now to Mark 2. We got this fun little story with moment with Jesus and the different Pharisees. Of course, Jesus made people mad all the time in the New Testament because he broke the Sabbath, right? Usually, he wasn't producing, he wasn't out there farming, but he would do the simplest of thing, right? He'd come upon a person and they would need healing, and he would heal them, and they would say, "Oh, you worked." And they didn't care the fact that someone who was born blind could now see. They just were mad that they would say Jesus worked. There was another time where Jesus' disciples are walking along a road somewhere, and they're hungry, and they don't have any food, and so there's little grains of wheat on the field roadside, and they pull them, and they start to chew on them, and the Pharisees find out and say, "Oh, look, they worked," and they're always trying to hold them against it, and that's where I think we see that this isn't the same thing we're trying. It's not this legalistic idea, but it's this place where God's trying to call us to live in a place of rest, and so they were challenging Jesus in Mark 2. And we get down to verse 27. I'll start in 23 just so you hear the story. It says, "One Sabbath day, as Jesus was walking through some grain fields, his disciples began breaking off heads of grain to eat. But the Pharisees said to Jesus, 'Look, why are you breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath?' Jesus said to them, 'Haven't you ever read in the scriptures what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He went into the house of God during the day when Abiathar was high priest and broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that only the priests are allowed to eat. He also gave some to his companions.' And then Jesus said to them," this is the scripture, "'the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of the people and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath.'" So listen to that again. He says the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people. We can take anything and turn it into a religious activity. But this rest idea, God's like, "I'm not trying to create a rule for you. I'm trying to do something that will benefit you." And this is really the way God is about everything. We tend to look at God as this rule giver, like, "Oh, here's the list of things I'm not supposed to do, and that's called sin, and I got to just somehow muster up willpower and not do them, and here's the things that are allowable, and I can do those things." But yet God really doesn't think in just this black and white list of rights and wrongs. What he's saying is some things are going to be healthy and good for you. It's to benefit you. And sometimes I'm telling you no to things because it won't benefit you. Everything that we label is that way. Whenever we look at something as sin, it's because God's saying this will probably hurt you and destroy your life if you act in this way. And the funny thing is that sleep and rest is one of those things. He's saying, listen, if you don't have a rhythm of rest in your life, it's not going to hurt God. It hurts us. It makes us not the people we want to be. And we can make jokes about being grumpy and overtired, but the truth is it can affect an entire lifetime. That we could become people who are never able to say yes to God because we've said yes to all the other things that we shouldn't have said yes to, and we're too tired and we're too overwhelmed and we're too overburdened to ever step into the call of God in our life. And so what we become then is just this producing human being that never actually experiences the fulfillment that God has given us or wants to give us. You know, when it comes to rest and sleep and Sabbath, there's one piece of practical advice I can give you. And it's very simple, but it's not easy. Learn to say no. Learn to say no. Learn to say, "I don't have time for that. I really can't do that." Learn to tell your children they can't play 5 sports. I know that you could chase me down with pitchforks for saying that. But I'm telling you, you can learn to say no, and it will change your life. Tell your friends, "I'm sorry, I have to go to bed. I'm tired." That's for young people. I'm constantly hassling our Momentum students. Constantly. I'm like, "It feels okay now to stay up till 2 a.m. But one day that catches up to you." Learn to say no. And the no isn't always to other people. It's often to yourself. Should I watch another Netflix show? No. Should I pick my phone up and read more about politics in the election? No. Should I watch another comedian for 25 minutes on TikTok? No. Should I play Candy Crush for just one more hour? No. We have to learn to say no to things. Because when we say no to things, what it allows us to do is say yes to other things. It allows us to actually give space in our life for God to say, hey, I have something for you. And we can't even hear him half the time because our life is so crowded and so busy and so loud. We don't even know he's trying to offer us something different in our life. And so we have to learn to say no, just to even create space for God to say, hey, here's something else. And you might actually then say yes. You might be able to say, I actually have time for that. I can't tell you how many people I have talked to that have said things like this to me. I've always wanted to go on a missions trip, but I just don't have the time. Yes, you do. You're just saying yes to the wrong things, maybe. Or I've always wanted to do this with my family, but we just don't have the time. Yes, you do. You just got to say no to some more stuff. We just have to learn to say no to certain things. No to staying up late. No to whatever is dragging and capitalizing our lives on time. We have to learn to say no, and it can build in a rhythm of rest and Sabbath and sleep in our lives, and then be who God's called us to be and actually accomplish those things. And that's what Jesus is saying in Mark 2. Just a couple chapters later, I want to read this story and kind of end on this thought for you. In Mark 4, we see a lot taking place there, and Jesus is teaching. He's teaching about the kingdom. This is where he talks about the soils and things. But we jump down to verse 35. And Jesus had a long time of teaching going on, and it says, as evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, let's cross to the other side of the lake. So they took Jesus in the boat, and they started out, leaving the crowds behind. It's interesting, if you actually look through the Gospels and through Jesus' life, he often uses a boat to escape crowds. And legitimately, there's a couple moments where he literally says, hey, let's get some food. We'll get in the boat to get away from the crowd. And it said the crowds just followed him along the shore. And he got to the other side and he still had to preach to them. So sometimes he's just like, let's go to the other side where there's nobody. I think Jesus wasn't afraid to know when he had to stop. So it says, let's take the boat to the other side. But it says, but soon a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat, and it began to fill with water. But Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. The disciples woke him up shouting, teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown? I just find this story so funny. These are experienced fishermen, right? A bunch of them, like, that was their job in their life. They understood sailing on the Sea of Galilee. They understood it was like, but yeah, this storm is so fierce. It says waves are crashing in the boat and it's filling with water. And somehow Jesus is still sleeping. I don't know if he's like, some people are like, oh, I think he might have been faking it. I just think the guy was tired. And when I fall asleep, my wife kind of hates me for this. I am out. Like, almost nothing wakes me up. None of the kids crying or screaming. She would have to, like, shake me awake when we had little kids and we would take turns going in to feed them or change their diaper. She would have to shake me awake, and I'd always wake up to her kind of mad at me for sleeping. I know. And here's Jesus. He's so tired. Waves are crashing and filling the boat, but he's like, nah, I'm going to sleep. And then they wake him up and they're like, don't you even care that we're going to die? And I find this interesting. I know that there's a literal story of him sleeping in the midst of this storm here. But I really think that There was something that allowed Jesus to rest even in the midst of a storm where his disciples thought they were going to die. And I really think it's because Jesus understood resting in his Father. He understood what it was like to really trust his Father for what his plans and purposes were while he was here on the earth. And so even though he finds himself in a boat that's sinking in the middle of a storm and he's pretty tired, he has no cares in the world, in a sense. And I think, man, I want to be able to sleep like that in whatever circumstance I find myself in. And I think a lot of us, we suffer with this difficulty that the world is hard and things are stressful and work is difficult and relationships are complicated. And so when we put our head on a pillow at night, we can't even go to sleep. It's like our mind spins out of control. Now, this doesn't happen to me often, but whenever it does, it makes me so mad because you can accomplish nothing in your mind while you're laying down. It's literally like a torment. It's like, well, let me play out every scenario of how this could go down. But yet you're not. You're just laying there, not doing anything. You're not even sleeping. And I really think it's this thing that comes against us where it deprives us of our sleep and we let our mind runs and we let our mind get out of control because we don't actually have a restful, peaceful mindset that God is going to take care of situations in our life. And Jesus did. He just was like, I'm going to go to sleep. It doesn't matter if the boat's sinking. I'm that tired. And I think that we should have this same spirit that Jesus has. You know, I love we get to John 14 and John 15 in these moments where he says, I'm going to leave you with a peace the world can't understand. And for us, I think one of the things that robs us of our sleep and our rest is when we don't have peace. Peace allows you to put your head on a pillow at night and go to bed. And not spend hours and hours and hours trying to figure the world out. It allows you to sleep in a restful place. And so I think what God wants to do in us is not just help us to make decisions. I think the practical advice, we got to learn to say, no, those things are important. But what he really needs to instill in every one of us, if we want to have a Sabbath mindset where we give him space, a place where we can rest at night and have these rhythms in our life where we become rested human beings capable of all the things he's called us to do because we actually are prepared and rest for it. It has to start with a baseline of peace in our life. We have to know we're not the one in control. We're not the one that has to fix everything. And I think God can give us literally gifts of sleep. The ability to sleep at any time. I often claim this for my life. I can sleep almost anywhere, on any plane, any train. If I laid down on the ground right here, I could fall asleep. I always tell this joking story where me and Chris White traveled to Uganda once, and we had this 10-hour layover in London. And we were like, hey, let's go see Big Ben, let's go and leave the airport because this is really lame. And it was super early, like probably 4:30 in the morning in London. But we got on the tube and we went into London. Of course, like nothing is happening. It's slightly dark and it was getting light. And I was super tired. And I saw these chairs kind of laid out in this park. And I saw these people laying on them. And I thought they were relaxing. And so I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go lay down, Chris. I don't know about you, but I'm tired. So I went and I laid down where these other people were. It was outside Buckingham Palace, literally. And I laid down, and I woke up to the changing of the guard. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that, but, you know, they do the big hats and the horses and the thing. And I was like, oh, look at this. It was really neat. And so I remember I'd slept for probably an hour and a half there. And I turned around, and I looked, and then I realized, oh, all these people are homeless. I literally just slept with a bunch of homeless people. And so I'm like, I can sleep anywhere. And I think part of it is because I want God to instill a heart of peace in me that no matter where I am or whatever situation I'm finding in, that I can rest in him. That I can put my trust in him, I can receive peace, and I can actually be rested. And I think that we undervalue what this would mean for our lives if we actually understood it and put it into practice. God wants you to live in peace. He wants you to live in rest. Matthew 11, 28 through 30, Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." Why don't we stand this morning? I don't know if I have a worship team. Do I have a worship team? Okay. He says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." Then he says, "Let me teach you." I find this interesting because the truth is we need to be taught. He says, "Because I'm humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light." Let me teach you, because I'm humble and gentle, and you will find rest for your souls. Who wants rest for their souls today? I mean, some of us are like, "Man, I just want to sleep more." But it really has got to start with rest in your soul. This is what I want to do today. I want to actually take a moment. The worship team is going to play a song here behind me. And if you're in this room and you're saying, "I need rest in my soul. I need something to settle down inside me so that I can be a restful person," what I'm going to actually do is invite you to come forward this morning. And we invite people to come forward to the altar, not just because we think, "Hey, if you come down here, it's more holy and something's more likely to happen." Usually, I like doing it because it causes us to move out of a position that we're in. And it's a symbolistic act to say, I don't want to stay where I'm at. I want to go to where God is calling me. And so if you're in this room and you're saying, "I want rest for my souls. I want something to shift on the inside of me so I can actually understand what it is to sleep well, understand what it is to have a rhythm of rest," then I'm going to ask you to come down front right now. Right now. No special prayer first. Come on down if that's you. And I want to pray over every one of you. And then the worship team is going to worship. I believe God is going to minister something in our hearts and in our souls this morning. If you're down here, or even if you're at your seat, can we just lift our hands this morning to receive what God has? God, we thank you that you care about rest in our lives. God, we thank you that you care about us understanding rhythms of sleep and actually not being overburdened and overstressed and overtired, but God, actually being fulfilled with the things you have for us, being filled and prepared with rest in our lives. But God, we ask today that before we even get to that practical outworking, that you would work something in our souls this morning. God, that you would work this spirit of rest and peace inside our soul. God, I pray right now that in everybody's mind in this room, and everybody especially up front that has their hands lifted, that you'd begin to literally pinpoint the things that they need to give to you so that they can have rest in their soul. God, these things we hold on to and we think that if we dwell on them and if we grip them that and we control them that maybe they'll be better. But God, we want to release those things to you today and receive peace in our souls instead. And so God, I ask right now that this would be a moment of release, a moment where people give these things in our lives that have maybe kept us from having peace, from having rest, and we give them to you in Jesus' name right now. And God, we ask right now that your spirit of rest would come on every person in this room in the name of Jesus. Amen. Let's worship together before we go today. Thank you for listening to NTC Messina's podcast. We hope you join us next week and have a blessed day.